With great mojo comes great responsibility. Mojo 5-0.
Mojo 5-0.
We will make America great again.
Sam Sorbo.
Hi there, I'm Sam Sorbo. Welcome to the Sam Sorbo Show. Today, I've got a lot to get through, and I have a guest. We're going to talk about the Gina Carano situation on Twitter and the fact that the mob is canceling her. I have some other updates about that. Also, the beginning of the fight back, which I'm encouraging people to engage in. I got a book update on my new number one bestseller on Amazon, my book. But first, my guest is Laura Kelly. She is a lawyer, and she's representing a woman who is suing a governor over her son's death. And her son, sadly, took his own life. And Laura Kelly is the legal representative for the woman who is suing Governor, is it Governor Pritzker?
Yeah, I'm suing Governor Pritzker. Yes.
Yeah, you're suing on behalf of your clients.
Exactly.
So I watched a really, and just by way of introduction, yeah. I'll say that Laura comes to me through my husband. She reached out to him because she wants to get this this story told, and it's a story that I've been telling in a more generalized way for quite a while. The cost of the shutdowns, the cost of the lockdowns on our culture, on our society, on us personally. But Laura came across his desk and he mentioned it to me, and I said, wait, I'll just have her on the show. This is awesome. You did an interview with Tucker Carlson with the mother that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And she went into details about her son. It was a Harris Faulkner interview. Forgive me. But she went into details about her son, and I was so moved and impressed by, there was a slew of photos. Of course, now, you know, kids grow up with 87,000 times the number of photos that we ever did, but there were so many photos of this young man in all different aspects of life. In other words, he was the marshal of the marching band. He was the lead in the high school musical, Music Man. He was in the debate club, the speech club. He was the all around superstar student. He was the guy you hitch your dreams to, right? Especially as a parent, you're like, wow, my kid. Whoa, I just can't even wait to see how far he goes. And then he went off to college and during COVID, and he chose specifically to go to a school where it would be a large school where he could branch out, because he came from a fairly small high school and he wanted to branch out into the world. And he was isolated and unable to participate with other people because of the lockdown. And that's when he took his own life. And so there are two reasons that you're doing this lawsuit. I think one is because there's something called retribution, and there needs to be some consequences at the government level for this tragedy. But also you want to make other parents aware of some of the pitfalls that she witnessed but didn't quite understand what they were when she was seeing them. Is that correct?
Yes, I had started hearing all of these stories months ago. It's not, Trevor Till is a remarkable case, but it's actually, as amazing as Trevor was, what we are seeing is it's really these super overachiever kids that are maybe among the most vulnerable, because they're so active. They're so immersed in life. They're so passionate. Trevor was the captain of his track team, the lead in his musical, as you mentioned, the head of the president of the honor society, the debate team, the drum, drumming and part of that. And he just, and then all of it for him, it just stopped when the lockdowns took place and the restrictions on high school sports and all these other extracurricular activities were imposed. You know, so we started hearing these stories months ago. And in fact, I know of at least 10 other instances of suicides of students in Illinois. And I know that in Nevada, we have at least 19 that I'm aware of, and other states. And since I did this interview with Harris Faulkner and Tucker Carlson in the last week and a half, I have had people from not only across the country, but all over the world contact me about their sons and daughters that have committed suicide. I had a friend that I've known for 20 years reach out to me recently and tell me that her 13-year-old cousin in New York committed suicide in December. And again, it's that same pattern of the super overachiever immersed in life and then can't deal with the COVID isolation because of it, just their lives just stop. And because they're kids, you know, they don't understand that there's a light at the end of the tunnel and that their self-worth isn't just dependent on sports and being the lead in the musical, because they're kids. And if the adults can't deal with these lockdowns and these shutdowns and all this isolation, how can these kids be expected to cope with it? And so they're not. And so we're not just seeing suicides, we're seeing eating disorders and hospitalizations due to depression. And thousands of kids in the sports area not able to go to college because they can't afford to go now because they missed their opportunity to be scouted in their junior and senior years of high school because of the shutdown. In places like Illinois, where there was a shutdown of high school sports in general, not as much in other states, but in states like Illinois. And now all those low-income rural kids and diverse kids are not going to be able to go to college because they missed out on their opportunity to be scouted. So it's all these thousands and thousands and thousands of stories that we keep hearing about.
What about the, this just occurred to me, what about the kids who are on athletic scholarships, but there's no athletics? Are they still able
to go to college? You know, I guess it's, you know, all these things are really being negotiated by these between the colleges and these students. But I would imagine that once they're granted the scholarship, it's hard for the high school to retract. I mean, for the college to retract it. Although I would imagine it's put on hold or frozen. I don't know. It's really all these are all different situations. But, you know, the crisis is in the mental health area, and parents aren't always aware. If parents are having trouble coping with this, they aren't always aware of what's happening with their kids, and it's traumatic for the families in general. This whole thing is just it's almost incomprehensible. And like, for instance, in Illinois, why it's almost an insult to injury on top of the trauma, the tragedy. But you know, Governor Pritzker in our state did not put any legal restrictions on professional and college sports. They're allowed to operate and do whatever they want. So there's no restrictions on college and pro sports because they're rich and powerful. The kids just weren't important. And that's why it's worse.
I did read that. And by the way, I'm on your side. I totally agree with you. His answer to that was, well, they have resources that the high schools and colleges don't have.
Right.
That doesn't really pass the smell test, though, does it?
No, it's a circular argument because they may have the resources, but there's no mandates for them to do anything. yes. Oh, they are very rich and powerful. They could do plexiglass.
It's actually making your point for you.
Yeah.
But Laura, they're rich and powerful.
Right.
They fund my campaign. High school and colleges don't fund my campaign.
Right. So who cares about the kids, right? And now, even now, so as a result of our lawsuit, people are saying, because we filed in December, and now all of a sudden in January, all the sports have just opened back up again right here, you know. So, but with restrictions, right? So all the high schools and schools have all these incredible restrictions on how they play, you know. And that, again, the colleges and the professional sports do not have any restrictions on how they play. They are allowed to determine what they should do and what they think is responsible, but again, no restrictions. That's why when you watch pro sports, you see, you know, Super Bowl, no masks, all this kind of stuff. They're allowed to determine what's safe for them. And the same with, you know, businesses in Illinois and in other states. It's like, okay, you know, how does the state define what an essential business is? Well, in Illinois, an essential business is a pot dispensary. It's a liquor store, you know,
but not a church.
Right. Not a church. Right. Exactly. So restrictions on churches, but pot dispensaries, A-okay.
I want to see the science on that. I'd love to see the scientific study that determines the essentiality of a business. I just made up a word, essentiality. I like it.
I think it's a great word, you know? And, but no, you're absolutely right. And so this is what we've seen this with churches. We've seen this with any religious activity. We've seen this with holidays. We've seen this, how Christian holidays, how they're celebrated. And yet, you know, people can go in Chicago during the height of the pandemic, despite the restrictions on churches, you know, Mayor Lightfoot here opened up Grant Park, to 20,000 protesters. But yet churches weren't allowed to pray. People weren't allowed to pray at church. They weren't allowed to congregate. So I think people don't understand why some people are being discriminated against and some people are given special rights and privileges. If the pandemic is so severe, why are we doing this to kids and families and churches and people? Why are we doing this?
Well, I mean, it does beg the question, how severe is the pandemic? And, you know, it reminds me of a fairy tale story. Yeah. Where you weren't allowed to go outside. And the only reason you weren't allowed to go outside is because the tyrant in the story didn't want you to discover that outdoors was really great. And so he just convinced everybody that outdoors was really dangerous. And so don't go outside. In fact, there's a movie about that too. I think The Croods has sort of shadows of that playing through it, that you can't go out because it's too dangerous outside. And then they eventually go outside and they go, oh my gosh, there's a whole world out here and it's marvelous. And right. So part of me is wondering, I mean, okay, I don't like to go down the sort of conspiracy theory pathways.
Yeah.
However, when they allow it for some and not allow it for others, and there's no test regarding the pandemic at all applied, it's a political test.
Yeah.
Then I go, okay, I cry foul. I smell something in that. So
the other thing, you're not wrong in any of that. And I agree, it makes you wonder. But I think also when you start looking at data, it also has to make you wonder. I mean, the reason that the World Health Organization changed its methodology on cycle thresholds and PCR testing sensitivity. And now, you know, we're also seeing, that then all that brought the rates down or did it, and how did it change how hospitals reported their data to the state that then determines the policy. I mean, these are basic questions that should be answered. You know,
on the eve of the inauguration, they're like, you know what, let's change the way we actually record the data.
Yeah.
Let's change the parameters.
Well, yeah, I mean, and by the way, you know, again, you're not wrong. I mean, this is a rational person, a reasonable person would and should be able to ask those questions and get them answered. I mean, this is not conspiracy theory stuff if it's in all these scientific journals. I have a very wise friend who feeds me a lot of this data and who breaks it down for me because I'm not a scientist. But, you know, any reasonable person would start asking questions when you start getting this kind of data. And the other thing is, I just heard this. I don't know if it's true or not, you know, but now that I've heard that the amount of testing has also gone down. So we ramped up testing, you know, if you start decreasing testing, well, of course, you're not going to have as many infections if you stop testing. You start decreasing testing levels, then you're not going to have as many infections, right?
It's so absurd. I mean,
and that's true, but you know, I marvel at how we have allowed these government bureaucrats who are not scientists and then to create the policy. And the other thing that I'm just shocked about is that these state legislatures have ceded their authority to these governors without pushing back on these restrictions. And like in Illinois, you know, we really have had this and so many other states, but you know, our legislatures should be saying, no, we should be creating these policies together. That's what the point of this is. That's why we have division of powers and separation of powers.
We weren't taught, you know, Laura, you're touching on a very profound issue.
Yeah.
That is the issue of education. And these people, because our education system is so degraded from where it was, these people didn't learn the role of government. Half of them probably can't tell you how government is supposed to function.
And yeah, so, or they don't care.
or they're enjoying what's happening. And there's a lot of that. I mean, I remember when Obama said, I've got a pen and I've got a phone. You know, if you're not going to pass the laws that I want. And all the Democrats standing up and cheered. And I remember because I was on the air and I said, do they not understand they're cheering their demise. They're applauding their eventual, you know, ouster, because who needs lawmakers if or legislators if your president can just be a tyrant, right?
And right. They, so well, you know, if you have people who don't respect the Constitution and they don't respect the notion of law, and they think that it just law is there to be manipulated, and that the Constitution is just a paper document and it's outdated and outmoded and it doesn't mean anything, then you don't care if you twist the meaning of it and its original intents and purposes. And that's really what we're seeing. And it's a really scary time, because there's this complete suspension of constitutional rights, depending on who you are and what you say and what you believe. But even if you don't say anything, we're seeing that these, you know, state governors are really going after just everybody, you know, families who are not political, you know, kids who are just trying to live their lives. You know, that's what we're seeing. And, you know, we're getting calls from all over the country now, people calling Remember America and asking us for legal help. And, you know, we don't have the resources to help everybody. We're trying to raise money to help more people. But, you know, we, you know, want to help people. That's kind of why we started doing this. And, you know, people like this lawsuit in Illinois is a very simple one. This is a basic equal protection lawsuit. I mean, it's almost like a slam dunk. I mean, despite the politics of the state.
So before you move on from that, because you are a lawyer, and so I do want to talk about the lawsuit just a little bit. I don't want to get too far into the weeds, but I want to understand the mechanics of it. What exactly are you suing for? What do you want out of it? And how do you go? What's the strategy? How do you go about getting it?
Well, so our lawsuit is a very basic one. It's very simple. We kept it simple because we've seen in these suits is that they're like doing these 150-page motions to dismiss that we can't respond to. It's like, you know, they've got like 10, 20 lawyers on their team against like our handful. So it's like it's the movie 300, but with lawyers. our lawsuit basically says that Governor Pritzker violated the equal protection rights of high school students by discriminating against them in favor of college and pro sports, where there are no legal restrictions on them. And yet he canceled for a year high school sports, and there was immense harm that was done. Wrongful death of Trevor Till, the other suicides in the state, the depression, the eating disorders, and all the lost sports scholarship opportunities, basically destroying the futures of thousands and thousands of kids. And in Illinois, we have a very, very expansive view of equal protection law. It goes way beyond the strict scrutiny standard of federal law, where you have to have a protected class, like a racial classification, and it has to involve a fundamental right, like the right to vote. So, you know, on the federal level, we wouldn't have much cause to make that argument. But in Illinois, it's different. In Illinois law prohibits the legislature creating special classifications of similarly situated people and then not having a rational basis to discriminate against one class versus another. So a very open and shut case here. We've got college and pro sports allowed to do whatever they want, operating, playing, performing without any legal restrictions. And then you got high school students who not only did all these high schools submit mitigation plans to the state of Illinois, but they were just completely ignored. So not only were they canceled, but they had mitigation plans and they weren't allowed to even pursue them despite having a plan. So two sets of people treated differently without a rational basis. The governor has still not answered our motion for summary judgment. That's over 30 days ago. So now it's a procedural cat fight. So now the governor is desperately trying to transfer our case out of LaSalle County to Sangamon County, where he's been getting favorable rulings. And now the judge in that case, and the chief judge in Sangamon, rejected jurisdiction and called Governor Pritzker out for forum shopping. So judge shopping, right? Which is really shocking in Illinois to see a judge with that kind of courage. You don't always see that. And now Governor Pritzker is going to the Illinois Supreme Court and he's filed a motion against the judge to force the judge to accept jurisdiction. We have filed a motion in support of the judge in the Illinois Supreme Court. So now this is a cat fight in the Illinois Supreme Court, all because Governor Pritzker decided he wanted to discriminate against thousands and thousands and thousands of high school students.
Wow.
One case. This is one case.
Well, there are a couple shocking things. The judge who called him out and said, hey, you can't just shop this around. was from, you said, from the jurisdiction where he had been getting favorable rulings, right?
The chief judge in that in that county.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
How, what are your chances that, because you're at the Supreme Court of Illinois state level, right?
Yes.
What are your chances there, do you think?
Well, obviously, it's a Democrat majority court, but by a slim margin. They're up for re-election in 2022, three of them. One of them, and basically in a shocker situation, one of the judges in that Supreme Court lost his retention bid last year in a really amazing, it's a historic event. No Supreme Court justice in Illinois, I think, has ever lost his retention bid. So his seat is up now in 2022. So I think all the eyes are on the Illinois Supreme Court about whether they're going to support Governor Pritzker's judge shopping strategy or whether they're going to rule in favor of the people. But I also think the judges in Sangamon County, as a result of that chief judge's courage, great courage, now are on notice that people are watching this case and they're waiting to see if there's going to be fairness, if they're going to abide by the Constitution, if they're going to abide by the huge body of case precedent in Illinois that supports, that prohibits this kind of discrimination against similarly situated classes of people. So, I mean, we have a very long body, a strong body of law that says we should win this case. And so it will, people are watching. And I think that puts pressure on the Supreme Court. And I think it also puts pressure on all these judges in Sangamon County, where honestly, after this chief judge did such a courageous thing, we might actually get a favorable ruling in Sangamon. You know, I mean, we actually might, as a result of the pressure and the courage of this judge, we might actually get a favorable ruling now, or at least a just one. You know,
but it sounds like you've got two different things now, the case of judge shopping, but that's not a case. That's just an accusation, right?
Well, it's in the judge's order that he's denying jurisdiction over this judge shopping. Yes, so it's more than a scolding. It's actually in the order that he's denying jurisdiction due to forum shopping.
So where does that...
So technically speaking, so now Governor Pritzker has filed with his legal team a motion for leave to file a mandamus complaint against the judge for abusing his discretion. His argument is the judge abused his discretion in rejecting jurisdiction. We have argued in support of the judge. Now the Supreme Court will then rule on that issue and we'll either go back to LaSalle County for our motion for summary judgment and to answer Governor Pritzker's motion to dismiss, which he's filed after our motion for summary judgment, or we will go to Sangamon County and have this argued. Yeah, one or both of those should be argued. Now,
So the Supreme Court is going to say where the case will be argued about the unlawful discrimination.
Exactly.
Okay. It does get in the weeds, and as much as I love it, I think that sometimes other people's ears might sort of gloss over.
Oh yeah, no, I understand, but you know, it is. I mean, these procedural catfights are complicated, but this is very political now. I mean,
it was political to begin with, right? Let's not mention
it was political to begin with, but it's so openly political now as a result of this procedural issue.
Well, and what we've seen, interestingly, in the past, I would say 2 months, is that they're shedding they're wolves in sheep's clothing, right? They're shedding the sheep's clothing and they're just being wolves. And they're saying, yes, it's political. I mean, the WHO changing their testing standards literally the day of the inauguration, they don't even care anymore. It's like, yes, it's political. Do you think the pandemic is a political action? Yes, it's political. Like, of course. And they're not shy about it. And Pritzker, you know, of course he's going to judge shop. Oh, and by the way, don't try to tell him not to. And so we're now in a position in this country of either saying, okay, it's political and they won. And so they just win. And now they'll win all the time. Or saying, No, that's not what this was supposed to be about.
Right.
And I think that, of course, I believe that we have to put the finger out now and say, no, it's enough already. Young people are dying, people with promising futures. I mean, hearing that mother tell her story about how fantastic a young man she had raised. And I mean, I'm a mother, I have three children, and I just, my heart breaks for her. Then it breaks for all the kids out there who are suffering because these restrictions have no scientific basis. In fact, the entire social distancing, wearing a mask, sort of that entire prescription was concocted by some high school students overseas, or, you know, basically, let's try that. Let's just stab at things in the dark and see if we hit anything. It's absurd.
The other aspect of it is that all the other diseases that we're not catching because of these lockdowns and restrictions.
Of course.
People. I just heard a case the other day, someone just called me, and because she didn't, this poor lady didn't get tested because she couldn't get tested because they weren't allowing testing, they didn't catch her breast cancer. And so she had to have an operation in order to remove, you know, for her, you know, she had to have an operation. Right. And I mean, they could have, had she been tested, that wouldn't have happened.
I had a friend who had an injury that she should have gone to the hospital. Luckily, it all worked out okay. But yeah. she, in any other case, she should have gone to the hospital. She had a head injury. She was bleeding profusely.
Yeah.
She didn't go because she was afraid of COVID.
Yeah.
And of course, those stories abound. So then my last question on the whole lawsuit thing is,
yeah,
you're representing the mother and you're suing on behalf of the mother.
And other parents.
Okay, so that was my question. Are there other people who have joined the lawsuit? And your answer is yes. So on behalf of how many do you have a tally? Does it become a case?
This is not a class action. We could have made it a class action, but then there's risks with that. So I pursue very narrow targeted strategies in specific counties. If we had filed as a class action, we would automatically been in Sangamon County. So I was trying to avoid the case going to Sangamon. So we represent four parents. We have a list of 2,000 or 3,000 that wanted to join. And so we have the four that's basically representing all those other parents, because our case will be precedential value anywhere else in the state of Illinois should we succeed.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you've got a fight ahead of you, clearly, because he's not going to give up easily.
No.
But I wish you luck. It sounds like it's going to be a fairly cut and dry once you get it into the courts, and it sounds like you're going to get a court. I'm hopeful that you'll get a court that is receptive to hearing the argument.
I hope so too. It really is just about fairness. We should be allowed to present our case, and Governor Pritzker and his legal team should be forced to answer our motion for summary judgment. It shouldn't be like, don't just ignore it. You know, let's at least get an answer. All he has to do is give us a rational basis for why he doesn't have any restrictions on college and pro sports and why he canceled high school sports. It shouldn't be that complicated. And yet they don't seem to want to answer that question, you know, which is why we brought it. Remember America Action, which is rememberamerica.org if people want to find me. But that's what our website, and people are contacting me through there and sharing their stories. And we, you know, we're trying to help as many people as we can.
Well, that's awesome. Laura Kelly, thank you so much for being on the program. I will put rememberamerica.org in the notes down below when this goes up. So thanks so much for coming on the program. It's great to see you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Okay, folks, let's see. I got to take care of some business here. There we go. All right. We're going to go over to Gina Carano's recent tweet, which got her fired. And this is really an amazing story to me. So I want to describe this to you because it's so odd and it's so on its face, blatant. Gosh, I mean, hypocrisy isn't even a word that covers this kind of a thing. She posted a photo of a woman who is basically in her underwear. And she seems to be running from the mob. because there are people who look like they're chasing her and being very unkind. And the photo says, the caption on the photo, it's a black and white photo. It's from Nazi era Germany. It says, Jews were beaten in the streets, not by Nazi soldiers, but by their neighbors, even by children. And then she has a quote here that goes along with it. So I guess her tweet was those words, even by children. But the quote was, because history is edited, most people today don't realize that to get to the point where Nazi soldiers could easily round up thousands of Jews, the government first made their own neighbors hate them simply for being Jews. How is that any different from hating someone for their political views? And for that, she was fired by Disney and excoriated in the press. By the way, she's someone who doesn't shy away from controversy. She leans conservative, as far as I know. She is a mixed martial arts fighter. Here's what's funny. They immediately jump to that she's comparing being a Republican to being a Jew in Nazi Germany. And there was a petition author who wrote about her. He did a change.org effort. He wrote, everyone is entitled to an opinion, whether it be right or wrong. Your political views, as well as your social media walls, should not dictate whether you do your job well or not. May the force be with you. She has a lot of fans who are lining up to defend her. But, you know, somebody else wrote, this is idiocy and the left cancel culture is a cancer on society. Disney shouldn't give in to the cancel culture. Disney's response is basically, well, you know, a lot of people called for her. A lot of people called for her to go away. She was excoriated. But how is comparing, and by the way, she didn't make the comparison. All she said was, if you hate someone for their political views, how does the left know that they're the haters? Just because she has posted things in the past that say that that show that she leans right. It's so uncanny that the left immediately says, oh, she's talking about us hating people, and she means that we're the Nazis. Isn't that interesting? You see, they know. They know that they have more in common with the fascists and the communists and the socialists and the hating body politic. They know it. And when somebody holds up a mirror, they don't like what they see, they smash the mirror. So that's all they're doing with this fight. And so to add to that, I'll share with you that my husband's Facebook page was taken down. Gone. Over 500,000 followers, completely disenfranchised by Facebook. Because they don't like some of the things that he's posting. So that's something that I call a digital assassination. There's also, by the way, there's a meme that's going around. It's not a meme. It's like an ad. It's clickbait is really what it is. And it says, find out what celebrities died in 2020. And they show a photo of him looking really good as Hercules, frankly. But they show a photo of him as if somehow he died in 2020. So I think he's going to tweet something about, hey, Facebook, I'm not dead yet. It's like, please put my page back. But they won't. They literally, he's not in jail. He's not been given a timeout. They didn't write to him and say, by the way, we're taking your page down. temporarily, or, you know, you're temporarily blocked, or they didn't say anything. They just took the page down. They just eliminated him. And this is what we have to understand about the left, is they a little bit of understanding just allows them to be worse. It doesn't make them any better. You can't appease them into kindness and respect for life and respect for other people's values or respect for other people's opinions. You cannot cajole them into anything like that. So that's why I wrote my book, and I have a copy here, Words for Warriors. It's very exciting because it made number one on Amazon. And so I'm very excited about it. And I want to share with you, let's see, there were a couple things that I wanted to share with you. Does everybody know what an NPC is? Because I put it in the book. So I thought maybe I would read that for you guys, because it's important. QAnon is in here. Oh yeah. I Plandemic, you know, that movie that you're not allowed to see. NPC or non-player character. The non-player characters in video games are characters inserted by the developer to interact with players, but only in a limited capacity. They are not thinking. They have a few limited responses, like, do not give in to the power of the Legion. They're like social media bots, which is a foreshortened word for robots. They perform a function, but never reach beyond their designed purpose. And we're living in a culture of NPCs right now. Why? Because all of these people went to government schools and they were taught only to repeat the things that they were told. And they can't think outside of the pathways that have already been worn in their brains, basically. I wanted to share with you a couple, well, I got a ton of emails and questions and comments on the book. And I've been doing a ton of interviews about the book, which has been a lot of fun because I just feel like, and by the way, did you see I moved? So that's kind of exciting. I feel like a lightness now because, as I pointed out in the interview that I just did, they took their disguises off. So we can now see them for who they are. And the question is, whether we are going to call them out and say no, and say that's enough, and I don't know if we will. I honestly don't have the answer to that, but I'm hoping we will. So, hi Sam, I just ordered your new book, Words for Warriors, from your website. Heard about it listening to Kevin's online interview. Searching for more information about your book because I don't want to support Jeff Bezos. I came across and listened to your interview with Perry Atkinson. Saying some very nice things. Looking forward to reading your book. I am also distressed at the way in which the left is co-opting and changing our vocabulary. We're living through dangerous times and destined to repeat the worst of history unless we awaken and fight, as I know you and your family do. So that's lovely. Somebody else wrote, I'm interested in your new book. However, I'm voting with my checkbook by not supporting Amazon for what they are doing to free speech. I love that. So they're asking how to get my book. Well, just go to my website, samsorbo.com, and there's a link there. And if you would like, I will personalize it for you for free. I'm happy to do that. I just want to get the word out. My goal in this is to inform people so that they are well-armed. Well-informed is well-armed. So I did an interview with Seb Gorka. He had me on the radio show. That's up at my website. You can see that. By the way, you know, at least get on the email list. At least get on our email list. Go to sorbofamilyfilmstudios.com, or you can go to samsorbo.com and sign up there. You need to be on the email list because, you know, Kevin's not going to be posting on Facebook anymore. So I imagine he'll be doing maybe an email a week, just with a ton of the information that he used to post. And you can always delete the email, but that way you won't miss something that's important when it comes down the pike. just saw this interview and I was so inspired. I'm currently completing my marketing certificate. I'm constantly trying to inject the concept of word assassination into our discussions. The young indoctrinated Marxists have no idea what I'm talking about. We need our words and their meanings to remain true, not this upside down, idiotic, Orwellian weirdness. So, and then this person goes on and says, so what happens when I want to sell this purple car, but purple has been canceled? How do I describe it? Is it now pink? And honestly, it's funny because that's where we're going. And I'm sure you've seen the memes of, I was just robbed. Okay, what did he look like? Well, I don't know what his skin color was. You know, was he dark skinned or light skinned? I don't know. Was he tall or short? Ooh, I don't know. Was he male or female? Ooh, I don't know. Because you're too afraid to see that. Okay. Kevin and I did an interview with Joe Pinion that went up also. Sad, but many of the, and this is a comment, sad, but many of the conservative and of course all of the liberal media side of things have been mincing words and playing word games and not being truthful to the public. And the only ones who are actually covering the truth, like you guys, are not getting the proper views or attention. Thank you for saying that. You're correct. The left is penning off what they actually are upon the conservative right. Have you noticed that Trump incited the riots on the Capitol? But apparently nobody incited any of the riots in the cities where the mayors actually incited the riots, permitted the riots, made room for the riots, and allowed the riots. He gets impeached when he's not even in office for something that the Democrats actually did. That's where we are today. Up is down, left is right, good is bad. But when will the people understand they're being manipulated by a few oligarchs running this dog and pony show? And when will they start thinking for themselves? It's true. So please get a copy of my book, Words for Warriors. I'm going to show it. Oh, well, it's right there behind me. Nothing like bald advertising. Please pick up a copy for yourself. And then two copies, one for your friend and one for the person who you know runs a little bit left, so that they can see the truth. I will be doing more homeschool helps. I just moved and it's been a madhouse, and I'm actually shocked that I'm even getting a show off today. You can see that I'm foundering. Have you ever noticed that people say the word floundering? That's not the word. The word is foundering. It comes from ships. It doesn't come from fish. So the beginning of the fight back, and I want to talk about this Republican leader who's here in my state, frankly, declaring war on big tech. This is from Liz Peek, who used to come on my show weekly, which was kind of fun. A Republican leader has decided to take on big tech. It's high time. While other Republican legislators complain and pontificate about Twitter, Facebook, and Google's interference in our elections and censoring of conservative votes, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has declared war on the tech giants. He's proposing legislation that asks the Florida state legislature to impose stiff fines up to $100,000 per day on tech companies that deplatform political candidates running for office in his state. Candidates like, for instance, Donald Trump. I love that. And I'll tell you, the minute that they pass that, we're in Florida, maybe we should sue. Because Facebook just deplatformed my husband. What do you think? I don't know, maybe. Calling the tech giants enforcers of preferred narratives, which is what they are, whose interests are, quote, not in the public interest, which is true, because everybody's self, folks, it's funny. There is one argument that is unassailable, that is absolutely true. And I don't know why we don't make it more often. Why does not socialism not work? Because you're selfish. I'm selfish. My husband's selfish. My children are selfish. That's the natural way of things. And by the way, we are more and more selfish because we're teaching our kids to be selfish in school. Oh, Sam, how can you say that? Why would you say that? That can't be true. Absolutely, it's true. We are teaching in school survival of the fittest. And you know, it's funny because I got pushback on that. I don't know if I have the, if I printed out the challenge. Somebody challenged me on that. How can you say that survival of the fittest leads to bullying? That makes no sense. I don't know what that, you know. It's really very simple. And you guys probably know this already, because it really is very simple. Survival of the fittest is evolution, right? We're teaching evolution in our schools, and survival of the fittest. And you know, you've heard survival of the fittest because we all grew up with it. It's this thing. It's this idea that the weak perish while the strong survive. And encompassed in that idea is that the strong kill the weak, because otherwise, how do the weak perish? Because the strong kill them. Okay. Now, how does that possibly lead us to bullying? We're teaching kids that that's the way of the world. The strong kill the weak. That's the way of the world. What we've done in the United States is we've turned that rule, that law on its head. And we've said, no, the strong protect the weak and everybody survives. And that's why our lifespans have increased over the decades. Well, now it seems to be, I can't remember. I think I heard that it slowed or it started to turn or something, but you know, your lifespan used to be 35, basically average lifespan was 35 years. Now it's like 78 years or something. Crazy. That's why, because we don't practice survival of the fittest, because we practice Judeo-Christian ethics and morals. That's the difference. So yes, if you teach a child that survival of the fittest is just the natural way of things, and at the same time you teach them that life is just a series of accidents that happened, therefore life has no value, then really what's standing in the way of the young person doing anything, including going to the school and shooting it up? That's morally, nothing is standing in their way. That's the problem. We don't teach morals in school. Well, you can't teach morals. That's your own personal opinion. No, it's not. Every law that we have is a moral statement. The stop sign is a statement about our morality. Why? Because stop signs conduct traffic, right? Why are they necessary? Because people would get hurt. How does that have anything to do with morals? Because as a culture, we seek not to injure people. We seek to protect people. That is a moral value that other cultures don't necessarily share. And the stop sign says what else? Equality. Everybody has to stop. Everybody stops equally and then proceeds. And if I run a stop sign and somebody gets injured, I'm at fault. And it doesn't matter my politics. It doesn't matter my skin color. It doesn't matter my gender. Although some of you would say that I ran the stop sign because I'm female. Don't say that because you're going to get into trouble. None of that matters. Human being. Human being. I'm a human and I injured another human, whether on purpose or by accident. That's a no-no. That's a moral judgment right there. So we have to, you know, it's funny that I'm sad that I feel like I do have to explain these things, but I guess I feel like I do because, well, and there's a reason I suppose that my book is resonating so profoundly. Is that people understand that they're being lied to. And I'll tell you something, they're being lied to from grade kindergarten. I'm just saying. Now, some lies are harmless. Santa Claus exists. Fairly harmless lie. I know there are parents out there who disagree with me, but I think that's you can teach a child when they're older that fantasies are meant to enjoy, right? And we all enjoy fantasy because we go to the movies. Right. So, but then there are lies that stay with the person from which they can't recover. And one of those lies is your life has no value because you are a series of accidents. I don't think you recover easily from that. There's only one way that I know of to recover from that, and that's through Jesus Christ. So, okay, let's see. Why we must unmask. This is off of American Greatness, and I really enjoyed this. Jason Fertig. We often refer to lockdowns as a proxy for failed COVID interventions. But I contend that masks are a more prominent symbol. It's frightening to think that American children born in the summer of 2020 and onward have seen very few unmasked faces other than immediate family members. And it's interesting because I read this and my first thought here was, what's fascinating about this is he's right. And, you know, the left is trying to make everyone equal. They want to just flatten everything. It wasn't just flatten the curve. It was like flatten the culture, flatten society, flatten the human into all one thing. But at the same time, yes, putting everyone in the mask sort of masks everybody and makes us all very same, right? At the same time, they are encouraging tribalism. Because when you only form connections with your immediate family, then it's your family against everybody else, which is not, in theory, what they're seeking. I think it might result in something that they can use, but because they can always use a fear of other, you know, they can always use that. That's why the antidote for communism is Judeo-Christianity and biblical values, because biblical values teach a love for other. Anyway, I'm sure if you run a small business under the boot of the corona fascism, and it is fascism, you'd give anything to be able to open at full capacity with a mask up sign. Just realize that doing so is tantamount to surrendering to greater tyranny than the colonies faced under King George III. That's the truth. As stay-at-home orders are lifted in bluer states like California and Illinois, let's not fool ourselves into thinking these states are planning Woodstock-style free-for-alls within their borders. And by the way, Biden just is opening the borders and not testing for coronavirus. So I have to ask, how dangerous is the disease if he's happy to let everybody just come into the nation, just come straight into the country, untested? For any disease, frankly, not just coronavirus, but for any disease, can he really make the argument that his administration cares about disease and the health of your family? Why is nobody asking this question? Businesses in such areas are still going to mandate some form of face coverings as the pound of flesh needed to patronize such establishments. Patronize. As has been the practice in even the reddest of states, even if both parties assert that the masked emperor is not wearing any clothes. We should change our country's name from the USA to the TSA with a perpetual state of emergency for a virus with a, he says, 98% survival rate. I think it's greater than that. The country is essentially a giant TSA checkpoint. 80% of Americans covering their faces when leaving the home. That's a sign of submission to the one-party oligarchy that has replaced our constitutional republic. I have to say, this article sort of really gave me pause. I knew it, but to read it and to hear it, does it make you angry? Because it frustrates the heck out of me. The submission, the ease of submission. And I have a lot of friends who submit. And I chafe. I so chafe. Be encouraged. Think about ways that you can work around the mask, especially if you don't believe in it. If you believe in it, then I'm not sure why you're listening to my show. Because... And I keep pointing this out. The CDC website had the study that was done 10 years ago before the politics entered the discussion. They had the study that showed that cloth masks not the surgical, scientific, whatever, N95 masks, but the cloth masks had a 0.02% efficacy rate in avoiding transmission of viruses. 0.02%. And the fact that 85% of COVID sufferers today are avid mask wearers, and you wonder if the mask is actually helping to perpetuate the virus and transmit the virus rather than the reverse. So I think, I'm running out of time now. So that's my show for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. And be on the lookout. If you go to the websites, please sign up for the emails, because that's really the way that we'll stay in touch. And I'd love to keep you posted on everything that we are trying to do to positively affect the culture. That's my show. This is Sam Sorbo signing off. Thanks for joining me.